Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
We got an interview coming up for you this week, but real quick, we wanted to re-shout out Layla Weefway has a show opening tonight at Aggregate Space. Get over there. It is called Between Beauty and Horror.
And after that, head on over to Southern Exposure, where they also have an opening tonight with lots of great friends.
Curated by Marcella Pardo Ariza. And that show is called The Tallest Part of the Arch.
Oh yeah, the Mooney show at Alton Siegel is closing this weekend. So if you haven't seen it, try to get on out there. It's a little hard to get there, but you can find a way, I'm sure.
Take the T train.
Yeah, and then Et al's shows close the following weekend, but you still have over a week to get there, so just get it together.
Also, I think Mads Linnerup has a video show that he curated at the McAvoy Foundation with a lot of video stuff, so go check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Also...
Hey, also, at
hey,
the East
hey,
Side...
Hey, also...
Hey, also...
Hey, also...
Hey, also...
Also...
Hey, also...
Before you forget...
No, also...
Here's one more.
Don't forget.
And this one.
This one. The East Side Arts Alliance. This weekend, both on Friday and Saturday, Dohee Lee will be performing. She's an incredible dancer, singer, drummer. She plays like traditional Korean drums. She's incredible, but she's also known, she's done a lot of work with Anna Halpern. So she's kind of, she brings all this interesting work together, which I think is awesome. But she's performing, and I don't know anything about it. I don't know what the name is, but it's at the East Side Arts Alliance on Friday and Saturday. I'm definitely going to be there at one of those shows.
Fantastic.
Probably on Saturday, because there's too much shit on Friday. There you go. I'll be there on Saturday if you want to join me.
Maysoon, we got that 200th episode coming up.
I know. On the street. I'm super excited. I've been doing research all week.
About what?
About, I've just been watching on the street interviews.
Like what?
I don't know, just weird random shit.
Like jaywalking?
I was on like SF Gate earlier today, and there was an on the street interviewee asking random people, passersby, about different issues San Francisco is facing. It wasn't art specific. It was just sort of like, what are the tactics people use to do on the street interviews?
Did they have a little box?
They did. I think we need to make one.
Yeah, we
do. Can you make one or two?
To put on our microphone.
Yeah. I think it's going to look profesh.
Yeah, we got to be soups profesh.
It's going to be so great. Should we both
wear
blazers?
Yes.
We're going to wear blazers. I can't wait.
Have to. Okay, if you have any feedback about that before we get out there, give us a call. 419-351-6606. Or you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast or send us an email. congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. Okay, we're out here in beautiful Oakland, California, talking to Maria Jensen, who is the current executive director of SOMARTS, but has had a storied life as a arts administrator and beyond.
I actually read that you have a background in like theater and dance and writing,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to ask if you find ways to bring that into your life still today, or maybe talk a little bit about how that influences you.
All of life is pretty theatrical. And
sure enough.
But I studied, well, first of all, a little known fact that I really keep quiet into myself. But when I lived in LA, I was pursuing acting. And I know it's a real shocker. I don't tell too many people that because I don't know why. Maybe it's weird that I don't say that. But it's stereotypical, right? You live in LA.
For LA, yeah.
Yeah. You're studying to be an actress? Really? You're kidding. I mean, I don't know anyone that's doing that. And I think I was always like a misfit. And I think that's why I gravitated towards actual theater, because Hollywood acting is trying to slot you into a particular like type all the time. Mm-hmm. And I could see it even in the acting classes that I would take. So I would take the acting classes, and I was studying with this fellow named Howard Fine, who was like the acting coach to the stars. And there are a few celebrities that I would see in class. But very soon, probably because of a natural satirical perspective I have from growing up in the Midwest, I began to see more satire in the scene study than was probably intended.
I love it. It's so good.
So I would find myself really enjoying the scene study and watch people act at acting. So I wasn't really taking it as seriously as someone who's trying to be in a big screen or mm-hmm. do stuff. So I did a few commercials, I did some music videos, small parts in movies, but I never really felt it was my thing. And one day the acting teacher said, you know, if you really care about acting, you should read the Greek plays. Mm-hmm. If you really care about it and you want to know where this all comes from, at least in the West. So I thought, that's a great idea. So I got a few people from class who were just kind of rebellious like myself. And we always sat in back and tried to keep ourselves from laughing whenever people would take the stage to do their study. And we said, let's do some reading of Greek plays. And we would go over to one person's apartment or another and take wine and cheese. And, you know, every once in a while I would say, well, you know, let's just really do this Greek thing. So we'd like put like a crown of flowers.
Oh my God, I love
and
that.
All this other stuff. And then we kept amplifying like what we were doing. And then, so actually one of our friends had a PA system because he used to do sound. So then we started doing our play readings like towards the parking lot of apartment buildings. So as people are coming home,
I love that,
from work, they're kind of hearing, you know, Antigone or something else. And then we started doing Shakespeare. We started doing these other things. And I was like, wow, I really actually love the idea of theater. So then started studying theater quite seriously. But it was Augusto Boal, who I don't know if you've heard of, but he has this theater theorist. And it was called the Theater of Oppression. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and so he based his whole theory on people who were oppressed, and he worked with a lot of prisoners. And he was from Brazil, so he worked with prisoners in Brazil to try to teach them about kind of like, you know, yeah, there is someone who's in control of your destiny, but you still have some way of negotiating your time, even if you are behind bars, you know, about how you think about the oppressor and how you think about yourself and how do you find power in situations where you may be, you know, oppressed. So I think a lot about his theory almost on a daily basis.
Yep, that seems totally relevant because, to your work now.
Yeah. So, you know, and then I just got into satire. So I wrote and produced two plays that actually got reviewed in LA and 99 Seat Theater, and they were all satire. One was kind of like when I got over my love affair, my short love affair with yoga in LA.
Short. Like it was really brief.
It was so brief. It was like, you should do yoga. Yoga's really good for you. I'm like, I'll try it. And I was like, oh my God, these people in this class, I can't even. Nope. And so then I said, I know what I'll do, because these people really piss me off. Because I would go to class.
Oh man, I love it.
Right? And it'd be like some like 20-something blonde girl with like a ponytail saying, whatever you're thinking about, just empty your mind. Like, empty your mind right now and be present in a room. And so the moment I emptied my mind, I just basically saw my hands around her neck. And I'm like, that's probably not good. I'm not chilling out at all right now. How can she tell me about life? How can she inform me about life?
No.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I satirized it by doing a play called Yogi Agogo. And it was loosely based on Waiting for Godot, where people would show up and their favorite yoga teacher wasn't teaching, and they'd be so bummed out, because that would happen.
Yes.
Like, you're going to class and you go like, oh, you mean Sassafras isn't teaching? Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
What am I going to do with my hour?
Oh my God, really? Oh my God, I can't take a sub. So I just couldn't deal with that type of yogic privilege.
Where in the Midwest are you from?
Oh, here we go.
Yeehaw. Well, I'm from Michigan.
Oh, okay. Not Ohio.
Michigan.
Yes. Oh, but okay, so now you're at SoMarts.
Yes.
And right before that, you were at you went from SF MoMA to SoMarts.
Right? I did.
And how weird was that transition?
Very.
I love that you did that transition, because I feel like the assumption is that you go from museum and you want to go bigger and better and more money,
like New
and
York or
more fame, yeah, and more recognition and all this stuff. And you're like, actually, I'm going to go to this amazing killer arts organization and make it even more amazing. You know, I love that.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. Yeah, it was different because, well, there was one time where I had, there were good times at SF MoMA.
There was one time that was good. Just kidding.
There were good times. There were good times. Like, before the museum opened, the staff was divided between two offices. One was on Mena, and the other one was over near Union Square. So you may or may not remember that.
It was before me, yeah.
So when you were working there, were you on Mena? Were you working in...
I started right before the opening, probably in, like, January. It opened in May, so we were already in the building.
Ah.
It started right when it was, like,
oh, so you and
happening.
I just kind of...
Yeah, I think it was, like, 3 months or something.
Ships. Yeah. Like, okay. So before the fabulous new building, the staff was in these two offices. And what I liked about it is that, especially in Mena, it was a very... It sounds weird to say this, but it was like a very close, cramped place to work, low ceilings, mostly mauve and tan. And, you know, it was hideous, actually, with old cubes from like the 70s or whatever. But everybody was kind of like there together and not that far away from each other. So you'd see all kinds of people going up and down the stairwell and in the elevator, and conversation was very, like, I don't know, spontaneous. And you'd have these great, like, think tank sessions. And so it felt like you could see everyone. You could see the whole museum. And that got lost just naturally when you moved to a very beautiful, architecturally turned out office space. That is a pristine white cube. And so that was weird because it reminded me of, like, you know, when you're in college, and I'll just say college because I don't practice this anymore, but, like, let's say that you're out with friends and you're drinking and, you know, getting high and doing stuff, and it's like usually kind of dark wherever that's taking place.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you go to 7-Eleven and you're like, whoa, wow, it's so bright in here.
Yeah.
So oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's kind of how I felt when I went from.
I love that.
Then over there, I was like, whoa, wow, everyone can see everything. Like, boy, I better use more, like, powder on my face.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you know, it's like really hardcore. So, yeah, it was quite a difference because you're right. Everyone aspires to go. It depends on what you consider. Ascending.
I agree.
It depends. It's I'm not a career, I'm not about careerism, so I tend to look at what's super interesting, what's capturing my attention, but also kind of like what's a little bit radical, mm-hmm. and what is being kind of defiant in a time when everything else seems like it is going more and more towards corporate, you know, reality.
Yeah.
So.
I was going to ask about that because, like, how is Soma Arts, like, navigating all the change happening in Soma? Because it's, like, one of the, like, fastest gentrifying spots in San Francisco.
Yeah, it's kind of terrifying because when I left SF MoMA, I started seeing the beginnings of some of this construction that was happening in the neighborhood. And then I swear it was like blink, and all of a sudden there's 8,000 new residents. So that's bizarre. And of course, the staff were kind of like divided between people who have been there for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And then kind of like the newbies tend to be the, you know, 3 years and less, right? So there's kind of a somewhat of a cultural divide, I would say. I mean, it doesn't play out, but I'm just saying that there's definitely a generational thing and people who remember the neighborhood went before it had all of this. So now when I'm pulling into the driveway at Soma Arts and I see the foot traffic, it's like a whole different type of citizen. And it's not to say that they're bad people, but definitely not invested too much in what's around them, but more invested in if they're working at Airbnb, then it's all about Airbnb and they may pop out to hop into a Lyft or something to go somewhere, or they may pop out for a restaurant. But the reality isn't like a citizen of a city who's walking many, many blocks and mm-hmm. gets to know things or uses public transportation mm-hmm. extensively. Because even the bike and, excuse me, the scooter culture still allows people to be a little bit like not connected. Yeah. So we're working on like, well, how do we invite these new people in but not change, just so we're trying to match their realities because we we don't want to be that type of art organization that when you walk in, it looks like you're still at Airbnb.
Right.
It's like, no, you're walking in.
Thank you
in.
For that also. Just throwing it out there.
It's like, no, it's kind of funky and, you know, so it is different.
Like that's one of the things that SoMarts is so good at, because we were talking in the last episode about where all this money from Proposition E is going and stuff like that.
Right.
And I was talking about like arts education being beneficial to artists because it creates a bigger audience for art. And I feel like SoMarts has like so many different programs that are like not alienating to people that may not be like have an MFA or have like a tons of a formal art education, but then also having like do you guys still have the Murphy Cadogan show?
We do, and it's one of the most exciting
so you have like the whole gamut of like super community like core stuff and then stuff that's like more institutional.
Well, thank you for
how's it
that.
Been trying to get like the new San in quotes the new San Franciscans like in? Finding a way to like bridge that divide. I feel like every arts organization is trying to figure that out.
Well, I think that they're already attending, and I don't think we've identified them, because most of our openings average between 400 to 500 people, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's not even with us really pushing it. I mean, I think a lot of it is generated by the artists also reaching out to their networks. But there are people who seem like they're just kind of like curious. Like you can tell when you go to a opening, like who's closely communicating and like who's just kind of checking things out as if it's their first time. So we are trying to do a better job of surveying who's coming and going, but not make it like this survey practice thing. We're trying to make it a little bit more engaging, and that's always challenging. But I think to get people in a neighborhood in, we have to provide interesting opportunities for people to, like, the threshold has to be so low, right? Because we're just being honest, we're also talking about people who may not have as much interest in art.
Totally.
Right? For sure. And, you know, I try not to, you know, marginalize people who work in tech, but I did meet with someone recently who told me, they said, I just don't care about art. And it just took me aback because I'm like, oh my God, we say that about you. We say that about you, and you're saying it's true.
Yeah, they're totally playing into the stereotype.
God. Yeah, that just, I was completely shocked. I'm like, oh my God, you're saying that. That's what we say about you. Like, you've given us permission to say this about you. And, you know, then I asked them, I said, yeah, okay, well, tell me what it is that you do care about. And they're like, I care about wine. I go, okay, fair enough.
Right? Wow, that's not one that I would have thought of. I heard it was, for tech people, it's all about classic cars.
Oh.
I would have expected food.
Yeah, wine. I would have guessed food.
I would have guessed food. Even if I was thinking alcohol, I would have thought craft beer.
Or craft beer. Whiskey.
Craft whiskey.
Or gin or whatever.
Yeah.
They've got the money for craft whiskey. Can Why I stop ask, at beer?
Yeah, exactly.
What was maybe the age range of this person?
Late 30s.
Okay. Huh. Did you bridge the divide?
Well, no, I started thinking about it. It's like, you know what? I like wine too. So then I thought, like, okay, instead of doing like some sort of survey and something like that, like, think about the basic things that people like and why they really go to art events.
Yeah.
I know to for a fact.
People to
cheese and wine.
To have
cheese
a date
wine.
With.
Cheese and wine.
When you're young wine. And you're in school and you need a happy hour.
You want that free drink for sure.
You want that free drink.
Okay.
Or a drink you can get and you just put a dollar in a cup and you're like, woohoo.
Yeah.
You know, or like a price point that you can definitely afford. So I'm like, aha. So that is how we also invite people and engage people is like, you know, we do have a bar. We legally can
hey man,
serve
whatever it takes,
alcohol.
Honestly.
Yeah. And it's like, then you have a drink and go, oh my God, this isn't so bad. And then you hit someone over the head and then they wake up and then they're all of a sudden they're transformed into like an amazing like lover of art and collector.
Yeah.
I wouldn't actually hit someone over the head, but the thought was kind of interesting.
Maybe just a little bit.
Metaphorically. Metaphorically.
Yeah.
Okay. Wild.
Yeah, because we have 8,000 new residents. We have 8,000 new people in our community.
So how long have you been in the Bay Area?
Well, let's see. It's 2019. So I think I arrived here in 2010.
Okay.
So it's been 9 years.
Right on.
Yeah. So I guess I'm, but I was in LA before that, not Michigan. Right. So I moved up. I mean, I was just like, not, yeah, I haven't been to Michigan, lived in Michigan in a long time. And LA looms large on the landscape in terms of arts right now because it seems to be really a world-class arts destination, which mm-hmm. is what I'm hoping San Francisco will become. I think we're 75% there.
Oh, really? Okay.
We need another 25%.
Okay.
I really want that, the speed train.
I think that train.
I think if we had the speed train, looper, it would be like an amazing duo there between LA and SF. Yeah.
Is it happening? Part of the Green New Deal.
Is it happening? Oh, the Green New Deal from AOC?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. She's going to make it happen. Oh,
I
yeah.
love her. We won't have planes anymore.
Unless you're going across
Unless
the ocean.
Unless you're going, yeah.
I'm not taking a tube. I know, I was going to
say, a transcontinental. How is that going to work?
Mm-hmm. Wait, before we get off or in a totally different direction, I wanted to ask if you could talk about, so SOMARTS is one of six cultural centers that the city has.
Yeah.
If you could talk about that for listeners, like I know, just
sure.
sort of frame that a little bit.
Yeah, because when people hear about the cultural centers, they don't know that there are six mm-hmm. and four of them have physical buildings. So that is Bayview Opera House, Mission Latina Cultural Center, the African American Arts and Culture Center, and then there's SOMA Arts. And then we have subtenants. So at SOMA Arts, the Asian Pacific Islander Cultural Center is housed at SOMA Arts. And then at the African American Arts and Culture Complex, the Queer Cultural Center is housed there. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make sure I got everyone all correctly means. Named and in the right places. And so the unique thing about SOMA Arts is that it doesn't have gender or racial specific kind of, category. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not named any specific name. Right. It's like, kind of like we work with everyone is what I like about it too. It's our challenge when it comes to funding sometimes mm-hmm. because we do work with everyone and funders love checking diversity and inclusion yes. boxes. So it kind of, sometimes it can work against us because we really do work with almost every group, mm-hmm. which is cool. Yeah. That's why I like it.
And so what is it? Are cultural centers funded by the city or how does that, like what is the cultural center sort of model in San Francisco? How would you describe
that? Yes. So we are in city owned buildings. And our rent is $1 a year. So we are given these buildings to function in. We're not city-owned nonprofits. I try to make sure people know that we do have our own distinct boards. And if we wanted to, we could break away and exist in another building and have a whole other different type of operation. But the city, through many, many years ago, it was determined that these cultural centers were needed, obviously, for maintaining, a perspective in a city that wasn't straight, white, and male. Right. So we are given basically a building to operate in. And we get most of our funding comes from the San Francisco Arts Commission, mm-hmm. but then we have our own event rental program. So we have a big space and we make maybe a third of our income comes from that. And then we do our own fundraising and have our own development initiatives as well. So we're trying to move away from over-relying on Arts Commission funding. So it's a very tricky thing because right now we kind of need it because we're still trying to find that support that comes from other sources.
I had no idea that your building was that secure.
Yes.
I'm like, knock on wood, someone quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in case.
I mean, I've been thinking a lot about the word secure, and we should probably unpack that one day. It's right in there with happy. I mean, I think that these can be very temporary states.
Totally.
So while you have them and have that experience, enjoy it. But I try not to assume that it's forever and forever and forever. Yeah. But I think right now, I think we're in a good place. I don't think we're in any danger of going anywhere. But all of these
buildings. That's wild. Well, I just feel like that's usually such a big part of all the arts organizations in San Francisco and in Oakland are.
Oh yeah,
it's always like
it's space.
You know, it's space. When are they going to tell us that our rent's 9 million% more?
Yeah. It's space, and these buildings are now more appealing and more attractive because of what's happened to the neighborhoods, like the pressure.
Oh yeah,
to develop, you know, the areas in San Francisco that were kind of like forgotten or nobody cared about. And I think when the buildings were deeded, quote unquote, to the Arts Commission and then given at, to arts organization as cultural centers, these were not in desirable neighborhoods at all. Mm-hmm. So where Soma Arts is right now underneath the 101 freeway, I mean, the raves used to take place there all night long. It was just like a complete free-for-all. And nobody cared mm-hmm. because there weren't any immediate neighbors. And there wasn't an Airbnb or a Pinterest or Adobe or any of these places who kind of then cared what was happening. But now we have all of that. We have a whole new reality around us. And it is changing even how we do events. Like, we have to rethink late night events. We have to rethink our sound levels. When we are having something that's outside, then after 10 o'clock, we have to make sure, you know, yeah. So it is changing, you know, some realities for us, but we still like to rebel a little bit from time to time. There's things that happen at Soma Arts that, yeah, it's good stuff.
Have you ever had times where, like, say, like, maybe a community group of any kind, like, came and was like, we want to do something here, and it was, like, really unexpected?
Katie, are you thinking something specific?
Yeah.
Not really.
No, okay. Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, I don't know, I had this whole image of South Park when you were saying that like a bunch of people would be shuffling up there and pounding on a door. And
that's awesome. I love it. That's the visual.
You know, yeah, that's what came to mind. I was trying to think, like, no, we haven't. I mean, we get a lot of people who want to do different things. And we have, for our event rental side, we always have to consider, like, is this an appropriate thing? Is this going to work? And, you know, there's been times when things have been at odds with each other and in that space. And I've often found that interesting, too, that there's a friction between what's happening with our gallery space as opposed to our event rental space. And then when the two groups have to negotiate space to get to the bathroom, that's very great. Interesting.
Ooh, that's an but interesting
But I'm the only
little...
one that probably finds it, like, so, because yeah. I think the people there are like, oh, you should have told us that you're in your event rental program, you are going to do this exhibit that featured all nude photos of women. And so, you know, because I inherited a lot of these ongoing, like, annual events, yeah. but now they've fallen off somehow naturally. They have fallen off the calendar. They don't happen anymore. And we're trying to create a more, you know, cohesive sense to what it is that we do, whether it's a rental event or in the gallery, and we're starting to do more programming in that bigger space. Mm-hmm. So we have a market that happens called Mocajete, and that's one of the largest kind of like Latinx kind of vending with, you know, food and clothes and jewelry and
wow.
music and this weird drink called, oh my god, what is it? So it's a Budweiser with tomato sauce.
So the Michelada.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So good. I just feel like, I don't know. I can't see from the inside what shifted. I've always been coming to some art shows, but I feel like in the past couple years, there's just been so many exciting exhibitions, like talking about very current issues. And it's been really inspiring to be able to come and like celebrate with like many friends and many new people that I get to meet. And
that's so cool of you to say.
It's really been awesome.
That. Yeah. Well, we love the curatorial residency program. And that was actually started by Justin Hoover, I believe, and Lex Leifheit, who was the previous CD before I came into the role. So, you know, still working with that model. But mm-hmm. I think that we have kind of evolved some of the requirements and thinking about our mission statement and looking at like really what's new and different. And the residencies that we hope will get selected by the panel for next year are amazing. I wish I could talk about them, but they're unlike anything that's happened.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So stay tuned for that.
We always like to ask our interviewees if there's anything else that you would like listeners to know. If there's something that we didn't mention that you really wanted to get out there, or if to shout out an event or whatever you want.
So we are having an opening February 14th. And that's one of our residencies, and you need to come and check it out because the space has been transformed. It doesn't look like it's ever looked before. That's one thing. The other thing is, I just want to go back to this wellness idea that I've been talking about, because we do work so hard. I mean, I think about it a lot. So I think about capacity. Mm-hmm. And I think that as much as we have all these great desires for things that we like to see in the city and things we like to see for ourselves or for other things, it's like we do want to have something that's held in reserve, because I think that's how we can, you know, be really good at collaborating, develop visions. And right now I feel like there's, after Proppy perhaps, that we kind of do need to take a pause. Like, I feel like the city almost needs to reflect on the work of Prop E and reflect on, and this work is happening. It's not me saying it should happen, but I think what needs to happen is we need to then kind of regroup again and think about what type of large festival or project could we do in the Bay Area that is so damn unique. Like in Southern California, they have Desert X, or there's Pacific Standard Time. There's something that unifies everyone, and it gets rid of the crosstown rivalry of which organization is doing more cutting edge work and which organization raises more money. We're such a small city that it doesn't really pay for us to have that kind of competitiveness at all. And I've seen it, and I've experienced it. And so what I'd like to float out there is a different type of bubble, that if we could create something that is uniquely Bay Area, that people are like, wow, that region really did something exceptionally cool. Because I think we have all the talent here to do it. And we have all the resources here, and we have the will and the spirit.
I was just thinking of, like, when they had the last time they had open engagement here, it was, they had it at the Oakland Museum, and we had like events here, and like they had it SOEX and all over. And it was a very like galvanizing, unifying, like we're showing it, like we're showing our area to people coming from out of town. It was.
Yeah, we have a lot to show off, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, we need to figure out how to do more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that idea.
I agree. Well, thank you so much for coming out here.
This is fun.
It was great.
It was really good to talk to you. And as always, congratulations. We gotta do a new episode about the motherfucking International Art Museum of America. There are people out here in the Bay Area that don't know that that place is a cult.
Total scam ball.
Even after I think the greatest episode of this show we ever did, episode 18, The Treasure Room, where we really went all the way in. Including research assistant Katie Kondo talking to the director of the museum. So I feel that we are authorities on it, and when someone on Instagram wants to say that it's not a cult, I'm going to have to jump in there. Okay? As the premier scholar of the IAMA, sometimes I have to put my foot down. So we'll come back to that. That should be episode 201.
Oh my god.
We got to get back
there.
Maybe
we should do 218.
They're charging... Smart. You know, they're charging admission now. 218's not going to be for, like, months and months.
I know, it's going to be a long time.
I need to strike while the iron's hot. They could be closed by
then. Do it next week, man.
They're charging admission now, May soon.
How are you going to get in? You're going to pay?
I'll pay. Ugh, should I not pay? I already bought a book in the bookshop, so.
Why?
Because I needed it for research.
Oh, my God.
Okay, people.
You should see if they have class trips and just get some friends together and pretend like you're college students again.
I bet they make you pay for that.
Bring your students. Talk about fucking performance art. There you have it.
And if they're open in the morning. Okay, that's a fantastic idea. Okay, you know, I heard that soon we're going to be able to ride our bicycles from the bridge.
No way in hell. To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been Congratulations Pine Tree.